Welcome back to the Four Idle Hands podcast. Welcome back, Terry, and we're in an awful hurry tonight.
Yes, because there's some football on tonight and it's free on the telly for a change. So,
yeah, for some idiotic reason, you decided to schedule this wee bit to finish a matter of seconds before kickoff time.
Absolutely perfect timing, actually. So that's perfect timing.
Yeah, so for those of you who are not aware, in Glasgow tonight, Scotland are playing England in the 150th anniversary game for the foundation of the SFA. Is that right?
It is, although I seem to read today that the first game was in 1872, so it means it should have been maybe last year, but it was at the West of Scotland Cricket Club, apparently.
Yeah, and I saw Super Annie McCoy's interviewing Harry Kane and that young lad who plays for Liverpool. What do you call him, the fullback?
Well, Robertson, yes, they were there.
Yes, yeah, at that very cricket ground. So for once, ITV got their facts right.
I think Kane and Robertson are the sort of poster boys of the game tonight, sort of thing. So, but
indeed, I made the best team win, obviously, as long as it starts with an S.
Yeah, so.
Great. Okay. So tonight, our centerpiece is an interview with Rick McMurray out of Ash. Rick has been on the show before, obviously. And Ash has got a new album coming out in a couple of days' time, Race the Prize. But before that, Terry, we have had the commencement of the first weekend, really, of the Rugby World Cup in Paris.
Yeah, so I think it's certainly quite an exciting, eventful weekend. Although, one comment on the scheduling, and this came very apparent yesterday at work, when people said, what's the midweek game? And I said, actually, there is France against Uruguay, which will have probably been the day before we post this podcast, but it's a strange scheduling of the tournament. There's not much midweek action.
Yeah, but I mean, that's been the same pretty much with every Rugby World Cup tournament.
Yes.
And, you know, one of the other features, I suppose, is the fact that some of these games are more significant than others. You've got a lot of games which appear to be very one-sided. But, you know, you've got countries like Argentina and Japan who were taking part in World Cups before they actually, you know, got, you know, the money and the financial support and the coaching staff. So one could argue that had they not actually found how not to do it at World Cups by getting eliminated early, they wouldn't have been as good as they've turned out to be. I mean, Argentina and Japan have both knocked Ireland out of World Cups in recent years, and I suspect they'll do it again.
No, I think that's a fair point. And it's interesting, just again, this week, the French are playing Uruguay, I think it is this week. And of course, Uruguay are a team which apparently, again, have a bit of talent. But again, it's one of those teams that may, you know, in a few years be perhaps better, higher level. Interesting enough, the French team have made 12 changes to their 15, so that the top players are not going to be playing until the week after or whenever, sort of thing.
So I'll run a few scores past you here, Terry, and you can tell me what your thoughts were on these games. The opening game was France against New Zealand, and France were kind of comfortable winners, weren't they? 27-13.
I think so. I think it was very comfortable. I don't think the French ever really looked in doubt of not winning that game. I think the French victory went down as well as my pint of Guinness we had together watching the game. So,
indeed.
So that was good. So yeah, I'm quite comfortable. France, yeah, New Zealand didn't deserve to win anything in that game. So
yeah, and in you know, the group of death, we had a couple of matches over the weekend. Ireland pretty comfortable winners against Romania, 82-8 was the scoreline.
Well, 12 tries. There was a little bit of drama when Romania scored at the start, and that was really it after that.
Yeah, you'd be thinking Romania are probably wishing it was the good old days of the Ceausescu regime when they actually got decently funded, but those days are long gone.
They could have put up an iron curtain, possibly, and that might have stopped Ireland for a bit, actually.
So. Indeed. The other game in the group, South Africa against Scotland, 18-13 to South Africa.
That's disappointing. No, 18-3.
Sorry, 18-3. What am I talking about?
Yeah, disappointing from Scotland after promise at half time. It kind of fell apart in the first 5-10 minutes of the second half, and it never looked like getting back. The fantastic cross park chip from the South African player, Finn Russell, was out of sorts. I think he looked a bit He looked a bit bewildered, actually. I think he was not quite ex he was expecting a slightly more time on the game, on the ball, I think, but he didn't get it, so no,
Well, he got
disappointing.
absolutely no time. I mean, there was basically a flat line of Afrikaners right on the offside line, just ready to clobber either him or any of the recipients of his passes. But I think other teams might have varied the play a bit more than Scotland did. I mean, obviously there's going to be a huge amount of space in behind a very flat line of defence like that, and you know, I think maybe that'll be something Ireland will have had a look at. Obviously, you know, the South Africans have got some decent wingers, but I think there probably was the potential to exploit that and make these big guys turn on their heel and run towards their own goal, you know.
I think so. I think there was not much. I think the Scotland just, I think, I don't know, they just seemed to start badly and never really got into it much. And like you say, I think Ireland or France or would certainly have a better go against South Africa, sort of things. But it's not over for Scotland yet, for sure. So, but.
It certainly isn't. It certainly isn't. And probably the game of the weekend was Wales's opener against Fiji, 32-27 to Wales. Thoughts on that one, Terry?
This was a great game, actually, because it was a game where Fiji, I mean, with 10 minutes to go, and I know, you know, in football, you can kind of tend to kill the game with 10 minutes to go. You can play it in the corner. It's hard to do that in rugby. And certainly, Fiji certainly put the pedal to the metal at the end. And, you know, if the long pass to the corner, if the guy had caught it, they would have been one point behind with a conversion to come. So I think Wales were very lucky to get out of that. Also, a bit of controversy about the referee at the time, who seemed to give Wales so many chances to not get a yellow card. And then when they got up the other end of the pitch, Fiji, one mistake, yellow card. And
Yeah,
I think.
that seemed to be really inconsistent. The other observation I would have maybe is, you know, that despite the referee warning Wales that, you know, if they infringed again, he was going to, you know, send Ben a player. He failed to do that in some cases. There were two cases where the infringements happened almost directly after he said it. But what would have happened if maybe Fiji had taken one or two of those penalties? You know, the scoreline at the end was 32-27, and had they taken the penalties, would either, you know, Wales have stopped infringing, or would the referee have started to send players to the line, you know?
Well, that's what absolutely right, and I think Fiji at that point were on top for sure. I mean, they were just pounding the line and they just couldn't, you know, get across due to various sort of, you know, offsides and so on. So I think if they'd got a try, I think momentum was with them. I think they would have won quite easily. Interesting to see if that referee referees again this week. He probably will because I guess they've got so many. But if, you know, Premier League, if he'd made so many football, if he'd made mistakes like that, I think he wouldn't be doing it the next weekend. So,
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree with that. I think
yeah.
Fiji got you know, really raw deal there, and let's hope that they can do you know, better with a fair referee in their remaining fixtures. Okay, Terry. Time is against us, so we better introduce our guest, our returning guest, to Four Idle Hands, Rick McMurray from Ash. Rick's band have a new album out this week. It's called Race the Prize. Here's our chat with
Race the night.
Race the Night. Race the Night, indeed. No prizes for me for getting that wrong.
That's all right. Race the night. Yep.
Race the Night. Here's our chat with Rick. It is our great pleasure to welcome back Rick McMurray of Ash.
Good evening.
Hey,
Thanks for
Rick.
having me back again.
Good evening, Rick. And we are recording this appropriately at nighttime, because your new album is coming shortly, as in this Friday, and it's called Race the Night.
Yeah, I'm just looking out my window here. And yeah, the skies are starting to look kind of similar to the album cover, so that's nice. It's
Cool.
get me in the vibe.
Is it quite exciting? I mean, this week, or have you seen the album and listened to it so much that it's kind of like, yeah, but you know, it's quite a big thing, I suppose.
No, it's always an exciting thing. You mean it's like, you know, we've been in this band like for you know, a long time, but it's not every sort of week that you're building up to the release of an album. You know, they're few and far between over the 30 odd years we've been doing this. So yeah, it's always like I find myself, I think it was on, not really been thinking too much about it. We've been busy doing like videos and bits and pieces, but I think when it We did a video last week. My comeback from that was Friday. It was like a week before release. And you just feel that nervous energy starting to build at that point. So I think I'm on top of it at the minute, but it's fun, but it's weird. You know, it's like we were talking about it last night, and it's sort of like it's almost like it's, I'm guessing it's kind of like your kids leaving home in a way. You're just hoping that you've nurtured them enough that they'll be all right out in the big bad world, you know. So it's that kind of buzz.
I mean, I'm sure there will be loads of reviews in various places, and it's all easy to get to these days. Do you read them, or would you just not read them, or would you go, oh, that's fair enough, or you know?
I don't put too much stock by them, good or bad, but yeah, it was like I think earlier on this evening I kind of sat down for a minute and was checking the Ash Twitter, and I saw there was quite a few in there. There was a couple of stinkers as well, but I stopped myself from leaving a review of the review. So
Well, I'll be on mine today because you sent me the link, and I was listening to the record at work today, and I accidentally disconnected my headphones, and so my whole office heard the first sort of four songs of the album. So I'd gone to make a coffee, so they
that's
were
fine.
good.
I mean, I think from what we've seen in the last couple of days, there's a certain record store that might have like posted out their copies early anyway. So there's a few vinyls like kicking around. So we're trying to sort of like keep that as quiet as possible until Friday. But there's you can't stop people posting stuff in social media and whatever. And it's like, I think we're a couple of days away anyway. So it's like if the record leaked anyway, it would be. You know,
That's
it's
good.
only a couple of
Yeah,
days.
and before we get on to the music, Rick, one thing that obviously leaked out when you announced the record in the first place is this fantastic cover artwork. There's a real kind of retro look to that. It's like something out of a Miami Vice poster.
Yeah. I mean, there's a bit of a Miami Vice theme happening, especially with the video that we actually shot last week. It's definitely got a Miami vibe. I don't want to give too much away about it, but we'd a guy who worked on the Race the Night video got in touch, and he was like, "I've got access to a crashed plane and a briefcase full of fake dollars." We're like, "Right, okay, go ahead, write a script around that." And yeah, so that definitely ties in with the album cover. I think there's just sort of like the Race the Night. You know, it's like that. That imagery just kind of like lends itself to it. And the minute we
Yeah.
saw that corner, we were just like, that's cool. We were just like, can you make the car look like a DeLorean but legally not like a DeLorean?
Yeah.
So
It's good though. It's the guy Pete Lloyd. He's done a lot of kind of art, sort of space theme sort of stuff in the pattern. Quite cool.
yeah, I think he's good friends with Tim's brother as well, actually, which was the connection.
Okay.
Tim sent over a bunch of stuff he'd done, and we were just like, "Oh, this is really cool." So, I mean, I think it's probably one of our best covers, to be honest.
That's
Like
good. I like
it's
the logo now, the Ash logo actually looks really good on sort of t-shirts and all that sort of stuff as well.
yeah. I think once we went for that sort of like that retro kind of 80s vibe, there was just like a lot of sort of like imagery popped up, and we had another guy, Pedro, who actually did the last couple of album covers. He was like, I'm busy with other stuff, so like, he was like, please go with Pete, but he's kind of sent over a couple of mood boards where he'd got a lot of sort of that iconography, and that was like one of the logos that he'd sent over was in that kind of font. And we were just like, oh, that'll look cool as hell. So yeah.
You seem to have done a lot of obviously it's important you put a lot of effort into the album to really get it out, but the videos, I watched the video the other day of Usual Places, which was done in that pub in London or somewhere, or was it that was
Yeah, it's in Brixton, Marquis of Lorne,
yeah
which
so it was a guy Niall
that one.
Trask who did a lot of Jamie T videos did that as well, but it all looks really good production values and stuff, so
Yeah, I know that was like a really kind of serendipitous. It was like Niall, the director. I mean, we'd actually like we'd about a week to kind of turn around the video because the radio plugger was like, oh, we're going to move the single. We're going to move it by a month. We were just like, okay, this is no time to do the video. So we got in touch with Niall, and he was like, well, there's my local pub And it kind of was just his first reaction from hearing the song was like the whole themes of it was like, that's perfect. It's round the corner from Brixton Academy. It's, you know, and you know the pub itself is like they're just like on gig nights, especially when it's like a big Irish band playing in Brixton Academy. They used to be rammed all the time, so they're seeing the effects of that as well, which really kind of ties in with
That's
the
cool.
theme to the song as well. So you know it's like. Yeah, and just like, you know, Brixton losing the Academy as well. It's just like,
Yeah, that's true. That's quite a cool video. And this is the first album back on sort of Fierce Panda again. So what does that sort of give you a bit more control over that album that way, or what was the move to that?
it was a real coincidence actually. It was because we were in the throes of thrashing out a deal with a different label, and our manager just happened to be out with Simon and Chris. They'd met up for a drink. It's just like they hadn't seen each other for, I don't know, 6 months or something like that, and they're like, oh, just catching up. And then of course it was like, and what are Ash up to? And it was like, well, actually we're just about to sign this deal. And it was like, oh, Ash are doing a new record. It's like, they should be on Fierce Panda. And I was like, the minute we heard that, it was just like, oh, this is just perfect. I mean, I've always had a lot of time for Simon. You know, he's like, you know, with doing the Fierce Panda thing. We were on, I think we were on the second Fierce Panda release, and Simon was always just this absolute sort of ball of energy in what I'd say was probably, you know, there was quite a few cynical journalists around the time in the sort of like late 90s, but Simon seemed to be like the complete antidote to that. He was just like bouncing off the walls and just really just having fun, like being around bands and putting out these singles just because he could, you know. And his energy was always like very infectious, and so for him to like kind of like come out of the woodwork at the perfect time for this record, it was just like, well, yeah, this is kind of where we belong, really.
Also, kind of like, because obviously I'm reading this book at the minute, Pandemonium, which is a really interesting read, actually. And obviously, you were kind of living through that period as well with them. So that's quite. Have you read that book, or have you looked at it yet, or?
It's just sitting over here, actually. Yeah, I think it was once we signed it. I think I'd heard like a few weeks before that it was out. So it's like once they were up for doing the record, it was like, right, I've got to read this. And it's I ended up like, I think it was the week we went down to London to shoot the video for Race the Night and sort of like meet up with Fierce Panda for the first time in a long time. But I was reading the book. I think I read the entire thing in the train on the way back home. I just like couldn't put it down. You know, it's like, I don't know, I'm not sure how far through the book you are, but you obviously it's at, I think from the first chapter, you know, there's quite dark things happening in it,
It is quite, yeah.
but at the same time it's really full of, you know, it's full of Simon's character and that sort of like that just effervescence that he always had, you know. So it's like a real kind of juxtaposition, and it's like it just like couldn't put it down. I need to see like where, you know, how this whole thing plays out, and it's just that, you know, he's a great writer, and just yeah,
Yeah,
it's
it's good because I'm
a
kind of
really.
doing. I'm reading the book, and I got the audio book at the same time. So I'm actually listening. He reads the audio book, so he hears
Okay.
voice reading that, and then I flip back to the book at evening, perhaps when I'm sitting in the house sort of thing. But that's no, really good. I'm about sort of about a third of the way through. I only just started a couple of weeks ago, so that's good. Worth a read for sure. So.
And one of the weirdest things was, I think my late grandmother gets a mention
Oh, that's
in the
excellent.
book, bizarrely. I think it's, there's like something about it. It's like I had to fly home because my grandmother wasn't well. It was a little bit more serious than that. She'd actually passed away, but you know, it's still like very bizarre to just sort of read that. And it's like, show my dad when I get home that his mum gets a mention in the book. So it's yeah,
Oh, that's
but
quite
yeah.
cool. That's quite cool.
Good. Moving on to Race the Night, Rick. The last time we spoke to you, if you can recall, which I don't think you will, but it was January 2022, so 18 months ago, you said that the band had been working on new material at that point. You reckon you had probably had about two albums worth of songs written. How do you go about whittling the ideas down to put like a record together from that amount of material?
Well, I think because we had like And we're going back to almost like a few months after Islands had been released. Like, it was before we toured the UK. We pretty much had a record. We could have put a record out then, or we could have like finished a record and had it out in, I don't know, maybe sort of mid 2019. But the record we had then was like, it was making some wild leaps, like from like some of the stuff on Race the Night, about maybe three fifths of Race the Night is sort of like had its genesis around that point. But there was a lot of sort of like poppier synthy stuff as well, kind of mixed into that. Now, what put the brakes on that was the record company wanting to put out Teenage Wildlife, which, you know, we were just like, okay, well, if they want to put this out and then set up the next record that way, that's fine. We're kind of like took the wind out of our sails a little bit, but you know, Tim's such a prolific writer in the intervening sort of time with, you know, pandemic and, you know, I guess like 4 years from that point, Tim just didn't stop writing. And I think also is that he's become a dad like relatively recently as well. And I think, you know, maybe his reaction to the impending fatherhood was just to, you know, do what you know, and just like he just wanted to like finish a load of songs, which means getting into the studio and getting them recorded. So I was like, well, there's, you know, there's certain songs we're doing here that we can put with certain songs we've already done and make an album that's a little bit more kind of cohesive and got more of a direction, rather than sort of having two albums that are sort of like jumping around style to style and then following up with the same album that way. So I was very much sort of kind of pushing that aspect. I think Mark was just desperate to get a record out, and he was like, you know, this record's great, let's just put it out. But yeah, I think it's worked out well. So obviously we do have a lot of songs in the bag at the moment. They're not all finished, but they're close. So it's like we want to get, you know, get the touring underway with this album, and then try and get something finished very soon as well. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it turns out, because it's going to be very different from Race the Night.
Okay. I mean, Race the Night, it's got a nice balance. I think you're kind of alluding to that you know, you've got a nice mixture of the guitar based stuff, and then, you know, obviously you bring in the synths and maybe string sounds in some tracks as well. There's also nice beefy drum sounds on the record. How do you go about setting things up when you're going to start recording these songs in the studio? I mean, is it a kind of band decision in terms of the sounds, or is it something you work out with the producer and the engineer when you go in?
I think it's pretty organic. I mean, I guess the early stuff is so long ago. I'm pretty sure that was pretty much me and Tim. I think because we like when we were in New York, we shared a studio with Claudius Mittendorfer, who's like mixed for and worked on everything we've done since like 2006. But I think his recording role has sort of like, as he's got more and more into the kind of mixing world, it's like kind of been his main thing. So progressively he's been leaving sort of more and more of the recording to us, really. So I think he might have just like kind of thrown up a few mics, and me and Tim just sort of like cracked on with it. Whereas the stuff that we did sort of post New York, recorded in Edinburgh, actually, the drums were recorded in Edinburgh anyway, and that is a guy, Graham Young, who I've kind of like vaguely known for a long time, but sort of like really got to know him a lot better over the course of recording a bunch of stuff. But he always knew. It was like, right, you know, he's recording the drums, and then it's going to be mixed by Claudius. So his kind of thing was just he threw up like, I don't know, it must have been like well over 24 channels of drum stuff. He just like he wanted to have like every
Oh.
bass covered, so Claudius could kind of pick and choose what he did with that. So yeah, I mean, it's like it's kind of a, you know, for an album that's been, it's probably been the weirdest we've made in terms of sort of like just being all over the place from our like small studio to this like amazing studio in Edinburgh. It's like a huge room with like just like a great sounding room. So yeah, but if you actually listen to the record, it's just it doesn't sound like vastly different. I guess, you know, it's like having Claudius like overseeing the final sort of mix and everything is what's helped tie it all together. But yeah.
Where is the studio in Edinburgh then? Is that in this sort of city, or is it kind of?
Yeah, it's done in it. You know, I say it is. It was done in Graham. It's still there actually, but Graham actually sold it. I think at the beginning of this year, because he'd had it for about 13 years, and he was sort of like, I think he's, you know, he loves the creative side of stuff, and he just sort of felt that he was running this studio more as a business, so he was just like, screw it, get rid of the studio, and he's got like a little kind of portable rig he uses now. So, and he's sort of in between sort of moving to potentially moving to a different space as well. So, but yeah, it was great to get into that place. But I think it's got quite a history. You know, I think Snow Patrol recorded their first record there, maybe the first two actually, and then Graham bought it off the guy who'd recorded that, who apparently retired to the south of France off the back of the royalties
So
after Final Straw.
that sounds
So
all right. You said there, you know, and I just those words, you know, recording an album in New York, that sounds like the most glamorous thing ever, but I bet it's not though.
it really wasn't, you know, it's like it was a cool space. It was great, and it was fun having that studio. But you know, it was like I'd always excited people as a guy, I'm off to New York for a couple of weeks, and they're going like, oh my God, I'm so jealous. And it's like basically I was walking from, you know, if I was staying with Mark, it was like 2 minutes from his front door to the subway, and then it was like a minute from the subway to the studio door, and you're upstairs in this windowless building. I just like spending like 2 weeks just not seeing any daylight. But you know, I'm not complaining, because like going and recording is just great fun. I love the energy of it, but it's like it could have been anywhere really.
Yeah, and I guess, like you say, you know, you're paying for the, I don't, you know, the practical level, you're paying for the space, so you have to make use of it. You know, you're not going to be going doing the Empire State Building in the afternoon and then coming back for a latte and a something
Yeah.
else, and then so
Yeah.
well, it's cool. One of my favorite songs on the album actually is "Like a God," which kind of feels a bit of a centerpiece. And one thing I really liked was the reprise version. So how did was that ever one piece, or was it always like two pieces?
Yeah, it was one piece actually. It was just when we got to the sequencing of the record, we were like, okay, with the vinyl, it's like, you know, trying to balance both sides. So there's like, you know, you're not putting like, you know, because we obviously two really long tracks on it with you know, like a God with the as the full version was like, you know, probably 6 7 minutes, and then it crashed out Wasted as well. So it was just like it was really difficult to sequence the record with that as a full bit. So I can't remember who came up with the idea of splitting it up, but we gave it a go, and it kind of works. But you know, they kind of stand alone pretty well together. But you know, it's like it's kind of cool as a single piece as well. So there's I think there's an Amazon version of the album
Oh.
on CD that's got Like a God as full, because obviously, you know, you don't have the side A, side B constraints when you're on disc. So and most, you know, most copies out there are going to be the same as the vinyl, but this Amazon one, we've got Like a God as it was recorded.
That's quite cool. Because it sounds like you had a bit of fun, especially, I mean, it's a great song, but the reprise version sounds like that's quite fun to do, actually. Maybe, I'm sure it wasn't one take, but it's, it kind of sounds like it was a little bit, so.
Yeah, no, it wasn't far off one take, that whole end piece. I think, you know, it was like when we talked about kind of like trying to edit it down, but I don't know, we just were like, screw it, let's just have the whole thing on there in some shape or form. So
Okay.
yeah,
Thank
that's
you.
cool. You
And
know, it's like we'd never done a reprise piece anywhere as well, and it's probably been a long time since we've done like any sort of like speed up freak out thing. It's probably, I think the last time we did that was probably on 1977, actually. So it's nice to kind of revisit that.
That's quite cool, like that, so.
Have you considered maybe doing the whole caboodle live then, Rick, or will it be the just a shortened version that you'll go on tour with?
Yeah, I mean it'll be talked about in the next couple of days
it?
for sure. I mean, yeah, I mean it's going to be it's a tough one, you know. It's like we're on album 8 plus, you know, with our tour, it's like kind of a co-headline with the Subway, so you know we don't want to be eating into their set too much by playing like these epic 7-minute songs every night. But I don't know. I mean, at some point, undoubtedly, we'll try and sneak it in somewhere. You know,
Yeah, and
we've got a few shows without the Subways, like towards the end of the year, actually. So maybe at that point, anything will go.
another interesting track on the album, Oslo, features vocals from I think she's a Dutch singer, is she, Demira?
Mary, yeah.
Yeah. That's a real change of pace, and it's textually, pretty different from the more kind of rock stuff on the record. What with the, the layered back and vocals and the strings and whatnot. It's got a proper anthemic feel about it. Are there any plans to bring this one out as a single or?
Yeah. Well, I think probably by the time this podcast is out there, it'll be unleashed. In fact, I was just watching a video, edit of the video, just before I jumped on with you guys. So yeah, absolutely. I think it's one of Tim's best ballads, to be honest. It really soars, and I like Demir's voice is just absolutely amazing. And yeah, it's a weird one. It's just the whole like the kind of hook of the song, like "Shall We Become Lovers?" It's like, I can't figure out if it's like kind of like quite sweet or quite creepy.
Well,
I
I thought it was
don't
quite creepy actually when I listened to it, but that's, I
know.
mean,
Yeah,
startling.
there's something about, you know, two people kind of singing that at each other. It's got a slight darkness to it, I think.
It's a bit of a grower as well. I mean, I think, for radio play and the like that, people will kind of buy into that, the fact that there's, a bit more going on with the arrangement on
I hope so, yeah.
that one. I mean, you mentioned it very briefly there. I mean, obviously, you're going to be going on tour on this, and your tour starts, and I say it starts in the end of September and goes through October, November, and December through all of Europe. Well, interesting. I was looking at this. So the first bit is UK, which is fine. Second bit is kind of Germany and the Scandi company countries. Then December is Europe other, I guess that's what I call it. And then it's Ireland. But there's no Spain or Portugal. Are they not Ash fans, maybe? I kind of wondered. I just thought maybe they're not. Yeah, that makes any difference to you.
That's a good question, actually. You know, it's like
It's like a.
it's one area that we kind of missed out on the last tour as well because of COVID. I think we'd sort of like we toured the north of Europe, but I don't I think it's like kind of like a probably just like in countries where we're bigger with the co-headline thing, it kind of makes more sense. But you know, it's like hopefully we'll get down to
Yeah. So
Portugal at some
where would
point.
you rec I was trying to find somewhere to go in the autumn for in Europe. So anywhere you'd recommend to watch you in, any places you think would be good, or particularly big Ash fans there, or
I think,
Osterhall?
well,
Osterhall, yes, that's true.
Osterhall is going to be great. You know, so I'm so pleased we're doing that again this year. It's just like it's the perfect way to kind of wrap up the year for us. But you know, if you want to go out to, you know, somewhere else in Europe to see us, like maybe Norway.
Okay, cool.
We've always done really well in Norway, but. I haven't said that as well because these subways are—they're probably like bigger than us in Germany, so we'll be going on first in Germany. But having said that, apparently we've just been getting a few messages saying how well the album's been received in Germany, and the like sort of pre-orders are going up as well. So fingers crossed, things will happen there. I would absolutely love touring in Germany. It's a great place.
Yeah, it's funny. We interviewed another band recently who are from Aberdeen called Cold Years, and that's the one place they do really well in all of Europe. The Germans seem to love that kind of sort of spiky kind of stuff, though. They seem to be really into that. So, so the Ulster Hall gig. So that is, you're right. That's the last one you do before Christmas. Now, can you promise Jimmy Nesbitt will be there again?
I'm not entirely sure about that. We'll see. We'll see who pops out of the woodwork for that one. But and the other thing I can't promise is not to like start another pandemic like last year. Because I think pretty much everyone I knew who was at that gig got very ill.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was like I mean I actually started getting ill on stage, which was really weird. It was about like a third of the way through the main set, and I was just like, my throat's starting to hurt. This is I was like I've barely even been singing, and then my nose started running, and then I just started feeling like I was tripping. So it was a very weird one. So I'm hoping that doesn't happen this year, and I can kind of enjoy it a little bit more.
Well, I might just have to do. I haven't been in Ulster Hall. I've been there, it was a year or so ago, but I haven't been back since. That could be quite cool. Well, interesting enough, though, I was looking at the videos today of Jimmy Nesbitt when he played your 30th anniversary gig. You also played with him before. It was the Spirit of Northern Ireland Awards, where you played with him and Carol Decker from Te Pau. I thought, I mean, this is a collaboration we need to see more of, maybe.
That was quite wild. I mean, we were in there like sound checking in the afternoon, and then sort of Jimmy walks. We hadn't seen him in years, but he just sort of walks in holding a glass of wine, and we were just sort of like looking at each other, like, oh, let's get him up to do Teenage Kick. And I was like, do you want to get up and do? And he's like, oh, no, I couldn't do that. I couldn't possibly do that. And then they end the sound check. It's like, if you wanna, it's like we're happy to do it. And he's like, all right, boys, he's like, leave it with me. So he'd gone back to his room and was watching videos of Fergal and stuff because he got every single move down for the night. I'm sure like chomping at the bit to get up there.
So recently I saw you in an odd place, right? Not that it's an odd place particularly, but in Omagh, which in a car park in Omagh. So how was that for you guys? Because I thought it was brilliant.
It was an interesting day.
Yeah. I mean,
Yeah, I mean the gig ended up being really good, and we enjoyed it, but it was just like I don't know, it was the setup was quite random. And we were kind of like it was kind of billed as a festival, but it was like there wasn't really like a festival stage there.
No.
So it was all like a all felt a little bit fraught during the afternoon, whether the logistics of it would work out. But yeah, once we got there and the crowd got in, it was a really good buzz. Yeah, we got a great reception there. So yeah,
Yeah,
very happy with
it
that.
was funny because it was a band of touts that were on before you,
Yeah.
and I thought they were brilliant actually. They were really good, I think. But no, I thought it was good. I mean, there was a lot of chat to the crowd. It was some guy's birthday. I think everybody sang "Happy Birthday" to this guy at the front, and then Mark got changed in to do his Venga Boys bit as well, which was quite funny. So it's interesting that place. They've kind of done a summer of it. They've had lots of, I mean, country music is very big in Tyrone, so that's obviously probably the main thing they've pushed on. But it was interesting. I really enjoyed it, and it was certainly, I think it was loud, but my ears were ringing the next morning actually. So.
Yeah. I think it's seen a video of the Venga Boys like a couple of weeks before, popped up on Instagram, and that was like, okay, well, this is yeah.
I think the next thing after Ash was a Nashville country act that came on, I think, the week later, sort of thing. So it's a bit random. So.
Yeah.
So you've also done some, would it be fair to say, solo stuff with Burned as Witches, or is that it's not really just that kind of more a hobby or?
Yeah, so I think a side project. I'm still,
My
I'm
project.
working on it at the minute. I mean, I did put up a couple of things in Bandcamp last year, but that was more a case of when I hidden when I like come up with the idea of the name for the project. I had a few names, and everything I'd come up with, there was already a band. So this was the first thing I'd come up and that I was happy with. That I started, doing a little bit of a Google check to see if there was any bands called Burned as Witches. There was nothing there. I was like, right,
No, I'm surprised. I thought there might be
and
somebody with
in fact, it was a couple of days after the Ulster Hall where I was like ill with this weird fever thing. It probably was COVID, but it wasn't testing positive. But I was like pretty much tripping out of my mind for about a week, and mixing the stuff on a laptop in my parents' at my parents' house, Well, I was isolating from everyone, so it was just like, So I mean, the stuff that I put out, it's like the quality of it's awful. You know, it was just like demos I've been doing in the bedroom, but I've recorded the drums for it, and I'm in the process of sort of recording guitars and bass in between sort of doing the Ash stuff. So it's like, I think it's kind of good therapy to sort of keep myself kind of like grounded, so I'm not sort of climbing the walls waiting for the album to come out. I've got something else to kind of
Graham
focus
Young's
on.
doing some of the recording, isn't he, as well, for the drums? So.
I recorded drums with Graham over the summer, and I'm just like, I'm kind of like tracking guitars and bass at the minute at home, but hopefully, you know, once I get stuff tied up, I'll get Graham to mix it.
Okay. I by the way, I paid £1 for one of those songs at Bandcamp.
Well, thank you
I
very
thought
much.
it was all right actually, so I thought there's hope for me to record something someday. That was quite good, I thought. I know, so
Well, you know, it's like if you want that pound back, I'll give you it the next time I see you.
Oh, another bit of housekeeping, Rick. The last time you were on, you were explaining how tolerant your neighbors were at the time. I think they were from Northern Ireland and they were just about to sell the house. So I think they were asking you to sort of calm it down from a frenzy level in terms of the noise. What's the verdict of the new neighbors then?
I think I've lucked out actually. The new neighbors are teachers, so they're out during the time I'm recording or drumming or whatever. Plus, one of them's a music teacher as well. So yeah, I'm getting away with it.
Well, I start giving you some advice. That's the only problem, I guess, if they're thinking about that. So you're touring quite, I mean, obviously quite a lot. So, I mean, do you enjoy the, I mean, I'm sure you do enjoy the touring, I'm sure you enjoy playing, but I mean, what do you guys kind of do to keep yourselves grounded when you're touring? Do you tour around the places when you get there, or do you just kind of go bang, 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 and it's.
No, it's, you know, to be honest, like most of the day is just taken up with just getting ready for the show. You know, it's like, but you know, get up, go and get something to eat. The venue opens, you go and get yourself ready, get set up, sound check, then go and get something to eat, and then do the show. So it's like there's not a huge amount of time, but I don't know. I've been really enjoying this because we've been doing like a bit of touring during the summer, but it's been sort of quite it's been mostly kind of one-off festivals. Like we fly out, do a festival, and then fly back, you know. So it'd be nice to get on a run of shows, you know.
Okay. So that'll be like a tour bus around Europe kind of thing. You're not flying in between all these, or
It's gonna be all on the tour bus.
okay.
Yeah, so it'll be getting to grips with that lifestyle as well. That'll be fine, you know. It's like, I think the older I get, the more I enjoy it, to be honest.
Okay.
You know, it's like, and yeah, I think this summer as well, it's just like I feel quite relaxed about stuff. It's like normally coming up to an album, you're just like, oh crap, you know. It's like got all these new songs to play, and you know, it's like you end up, you know, especially if an album's just come out, you put and you're doing a load of shows, you end up sort of like subconsciously putting a lot of pressure on it, but I'm trying to just take things as they come a
So,
little bit more, just like kind of be in the moment and just like don't worry about, I think we I think we know what we're doing these days, you know. I think, you know, maybe not being hungover when I'm playing all the time. I'm a little bit more relaxed about
that's
things.
good.
So,
How's Mark as a traveling partner? Is he okay on the tour bus? Will he be all right, you think? Because.
He'll be great. Yeah, I mean, he's like he gets very stuck into the merch as well, like setting up the merch during the day and stuff. So it's like that's his kind of thing, and yeah, he keeps himself busy. So
My wife thought he was most amusing in Omagh. She thought it was not quite sure. She's seen us before, but I don't think she'd never noticed Mark as much because we were a bit obviously a bit closer, and you're right there. She was quite funny.
He's good value for money on stage, to be sure.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, all right. Well, look, thank you very much for your time this week. Tonight's been great. I look forward to the album. I've listened to it a couple of times and really enjoyed it. So I'm looking forward to my gold ticket copy popping through the door anytime. That's quite a good idea, by the way.
Yeah. I think that was a good Fierce Panda idea. I don't know if they do it with every release, but I think it's like, yeah. I think they have done it before and it works quite well. So.
And there is a strange, I'm about to ask you as well, sorry, a real strange digital copy that's got like a track by track kind of discussion on each one on it. Have you seen that as well?
Yeah. Well, I actually did. I did the track by track thing last week.
Okay.
While Tim was busy shooting videos.
Okay. Well, that's quite interesting.
So yeah, if there's anyone to blame for it being crap, it's me.
Okay. Well, I'll pass all my feedback on your, you know, your public social media. This is, you know, you're probably not.
You better give them 5 stars, Terry, or we'll never get them back on again.
No, I think so. No, well, that's great. It's exciting. You know, you're going around Europe.
You can have me back on to justify myself or something.
Yeah, that's
all. Yeah, so 18 months' time, we'll sort out a date with you, Rick.
Right. Okay,
I can't believe it's been 18 months since the last time I was on here.
Hello?
Wow, it really doesn't feel like 18 months ago. That's nuts.
I know, there's so much time. I mean, it's just unbelievable, all that kind of stuff that was going on through COVID, and then all of a sudden now it's, September 2023. And so thank you very much for your time, Rick. It's been a pleasure. And good luck with the album and the tour, and I'm sure we'll catch you somewhere.
Cheers, guys. Pleasure.
Thanks,
talking
Rick.
To you.
Well, every success on the record.
Right.
Nice one.
So I think you made a good comment to me afterwards. You said that Rick is certainly, you get good value from a chat with Rick, and I think that's certainly the case. So,
yeah, well, particularly when he does it for absolutely nothing.
That's true. But he was very casual on what is a release week, and I was looking at their schedule today. They've got a load of in-stores. I mean, I know there's a couple in Scotland, there's a couple in Edinburgh and Glasgow, and then they've got all sorts of places. They're going to Dublin next Thursday to do Tower Records in Dublin. Back and forward, and a fairly hectic schedule, and then straight into a tour. So I'm sure it will all go well for them, and certainly we'll review the album on a later episode. But
yeah, I mean, we got a sneak peek listen to it, and one thing I would say about it, for a band, you know, now they're obviously onto their 8th studio album, there's still kind of a sense of freshness to the new stuff, Terry, isn't there?
I think so. So absolutely. I was kind of, you know, never quite sure how bands are going to be 8 albums in, but yeah, I think their songwriting's pretty sharp. A lot of a couple of good heavy numbers, Like a Gauze, a good one, and a couple of punky ones as well, Brain Dead and stuff. So no, I think it sounds like they're really enjoying themselves, and I think the album is born out of the end of through COVID, and then you know, the excitement of kind of getting back into gigs and playing live. So yeah, I think it'll go down well live for sure, and hopefully it's a successful album. So
yeah, I'm sure it will be, and hopefully get them some new fans as well as guys like you and me.
I think so.
Great. Okay. Well, you know, the match is about to start, Terry, so I think we better clear off. But we will be back before you know it with another Four Idle Hands podcast.
Absolutely. I shall see you soon, and I'm off to wave to Harry Kane. So,
bye bye, Harry.
Bye.